Hello and good evening. Welcome back to another week of the Alaska Identity Project. My name is Adrienne Lopez, broadcasting on KTOO News Juneau 104.3 in Alaska's capital city. Stay tuned in the next hour. I'll be interviewing, in the first part of the show, Jeff Kirsch, an Alaskan comedian of sorts, a professional writer who has done comedy, television, animation, web content, and ad copy, straight journalism, PR, speech writing, and fiction. Also, his first book-length piece, Run for Your Life, Doomsday 2012, just came out from Workman. And in the second part of the show, Niels Andreasen, Managing Director of the Institute of the North, will be speaking with us here on the Alaska Identity Project. The Institute has a legacy of working on Arctic infrastructure priorities and policies that serve to strengthen and connect northern communities. InstituteNorth.org is their website. You can participate in the Alaska Identity Project by asking questions of my guests. If you're out there and you have a question, you can find the Alaska Identity Project on Facebook, post a question on my wall, or also follow us on Twitter at Alaska ID Project. I also have a section on my blog that I just updated, which has all the guests up until now, and when there's a chance for a picture, I put pictures up there, and that website is Adrienne Chile, like the country, C-H-I-L-E, .blogspot.com. So there you can follow the show as well. Tonight I have two quick plugs for my day job at the Juneau Economic Development Council. They have our Juneau Robot Jamboree coming up this weekend, Saturday, from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. You can come out and watch robot action. The best time for spectators is from 1 to 3 at Centennial Hall. It's the Southeast Regional First LEGO League Tournament. And then on Tuesday, we are organizing the Southeast Economic Summit. It's from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., also at Centennial Hall. And if you're out there, you represent industry or government, or you're from an association and you just have an interest in economic issues and development in Southeast Alaska, you can register at jedc.org/summit, and it'll be great to see you there. Jeff Kirsch has written for Comedy Central, Huffington Post, and the Chicago Tribune. His first book-length piece, like I mentioned just now, is called Run for Your Life, Doomsday 2012, which came out this past summer. For the last 2.5 years, he's been writing a regular column called Slack Tide in the Juneau Empire, hailed by critics as, quote, in English, and, quote, left to right, top to bottom.
Yep.
Your website is jeffkirsch.com. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the show, Jeff. Finally, hey. I got you. Hey. You're such a busy guy.
Yeah, I don't know. It's funny because I'm really not that busy. Or I guess I don't think of myself as being that busy, but maybe I am if you've been trying to get me for... I don't know, you had this knack of being like, hey, can you be at my show on Thursday? And I'd be like, I'm in Boston. I'm in Boston again. Like,
jet setting.
I was in Boston twice. I hate going to Boston, and I was in Boston twice in October.
It's a long trip. Did you take the Alaska flight to Boston?
To New York and Boston, so it was like a double kind of deal. But now, so my sister lives in, my family's back, like our whole deal is back in New York. So we go there once a year, generally speaking, but now my sister lives in Boston, so we have to go up to Boston, too. So it's like a double deal. It's great. We get to drive, like, along that corridor and sit in some traffic. It's really totally awesome. Although, there are Dunkin' Donuts all over the place. I don't know if you're familiar with that section of the Northeast, but there's a Dunkin' Donuts every 5 feet. And so, yeah, they have a new, like, pumpkin donut that's out
a
for the
fall. Pumpkin donut.
Yeah, so anyway, but there, you got to find your small... things where you can get them. So.
Yeah.
But anyway,
here
I'm
back. You appreciate Juneau traffic then when you get back from those trips.
It's so funny. I was just saying to my wife, I'm like, this is traffic. I mean, we were waiting behind 5 cars in the traffic circle, you know what I mean, at like 5 to 8. And I'm like, this is the best. Because my parents now live in Southern California, and that is like even more hellish as far as traffic. I mean, in New York, you can kind of anticipate when there's going to be traffic, but in L.A., you have to anticipate there's always going to be traffic all the time, every time.
That
is way off of every topic.
Well, I just want to kind of give the background here, because I met you at the Maritime Festival this year.
Yeah.
We organized this festival, and you came and sang a song. You're part of our entertainment.
Yeah,
and then your name popped up again in October when I was reading the All You Want to Know About Alaska and Less article in The Empire. And I thought, wow, this is just what I would want for this show, because you have an Alaskapedia.
Yeah.
Did you coin that term?
Well, yeah, so there was already an Alaskapedia that is not... I don't know if necessarily they would be listening to the show, and I don't want to offend anyone, but it seemed more substantial than something that I could just steal, but also, like, anyway, so mine is Alaska, it's got that A-E, you know, and the O-E kind of deal, like, there's, I don't know what those are called, but smashed together.
How do you pronounce it, then?
just Alaskapedia, but okay. I've spelled it that way just to avoid potential copyright infringement. For whatever reason, I'm like thinking about stuff like that now.
Yeah, that's good.
No, but anyway, yeah, no, I was thinking that I used to do, so I used to write for another, it was like a fake Wikipedia kind of thing, and I did that for a couple of years very steadily. In fact, like I got paid money, like a real job to be doing that, and
wow.
It was really the first regular, you know, comic writing thing that I was doing.
And this was called, are we allowed to say it on air? Wikipedia? It's just someone's name, right?
Yeah. But, yeah, and so it was, I actually think I may have said that on this radio station before with Jeff Brown. Anyway, but, yeah, so, you know, the thing for me is that it's like, well, I spent 2 years doing this and getting really good at this, and it was partly a Huffington Post feature and another venture, you know, another internet venture firm. This guy Barry Diller, he does IAC. He's got like the Knot.com and stuff like that. But anyway, in 2008, everybody was like, "Oh, we have to cancel all of the things that we're spending money on because suddenly the economy was garbagey." Mm. So I don't know. And then eventually later, Arianne Huffington decided that she didn't feel like she wanted to pay writers anymore, and so I had to stop.
Wow.
But anyway, like I spent a lot of time doing this, and well, I mean, to do it for 2 years, to have a freelance gig that lasts regularly for 2 years is amazing.
That's pretty good, yeah.
So I was like, well, I know how to do this. Like I've become very adept at this particular style of thing, and it's like I like writing about Alaska, and I don't necessarily, you know, there is humor. There's, you know, Mr. White Keys does. He's got a book, I can't remember off the top of my head what it's called, and he was the one who did that, the Whale Fat and Pork Fat Follies in Anchorage, the Fly By Night Club.
Okay.
And it's like, but there's not necessarily, and you know, Jeff Brown is doing stuff, but it's like, well, here's something that I do, that I was doing, and here's this place, Juneau, Alaska, and Alaska in general. It's just an interesting, wacky place.
Yeah,
I mean,
me too.
And so anyway, I don't know. I just was like, well, for me, it's all about not reinventing things, basically. It's like, well, how can I translate this particular thing into something else and into something else and into something else? That's a very crafty way of looking at it. But when you're trying to make money or trying to do something, I mean, for me also, because I write Slacktide every other week, and even still, it's hard to think of topics, you know? And also, it's like, I find myself, especially when I go back and take a look, it's like I make the exact same joke about shoveling snow, you know, 2 years later that I made 2 years ago. I'm like, man, I'm like I'm repeating myself over and over. But
different angles.
But anyway, I'm saying, so it's like, if I don't necessarily have an idea that will be so a great, like, narrative little thing, then it's like, oh, well, maybe I'll just do another entry of Alaskapedia, right? So that's,
I get it.
You know, another one of those things.
It.
Well,
okay.
Yeah, and, you know, thinking about how I can keep doing it and to keep, I mean, you have to continue being fresh with things like that. Otherwise, I'm always scared that, even though I have run some reruns, like, I'm always scared that people are just going to be like, oh, well, it's done. I guess that's it, and not even read it again. Even though I know that's probably not true, that's just how I think about it. And
well, do people give you feedback on the article, on the column here?
Oh, yeah.
In Juneau,
I mean,
yeah.
Oh, for sure. I get, you know, every... It's funny, because, I mean, I keep getting... I would say, you know, several people who I've never met before are like, hey, Jeff, I just wanted to let you know. And it's kind of fun. I mean, I did another one recently. It was like 50 thoughts while snow blowing my driveway or something like that. And, you know, and I was looking online to see the comments, and people had started going like up to, like, I think up to 70-something. Like, people were adding other of their random thoughts. And I'm like, that's really cool. So
people from Juneau, Alaska,
around town, if I go to Fred Meyer, generally speaking, you know, in the airport, I was in the Seattle airport the other day, like in the kids' play space, and someone came over. So it's kind of fun. Baggage claim at the airport, that's another place where people are like, are you that guy? And sometimes people are like, I didn't think that you really existed. And I'm like, no, I don't really exist. You know, I'm really...
I have a red beard.
Yeah.
Nice.
I'm in the process of growing it out, too. Anyway, so, yeah. You had a question?
No, good. The Alaskapedia, I just find, for those who might be listening from out of state or eventually maybe listen to this recording, I just kind of wanted to go through some of these very funny things. I don't know if you have a favorite part or an area you like to start with. like the regions of our state, South Central versus Southeast or Interior. Maybe make a couple comments on the regions of our state. Do you remember them?
Actually, yeah, no, I do. It's funny because I was like, maybe I should reread those pieces. But I have. Anyway, yeah, what does it say right there? I mean,
So South Central, you've got, of course, Anchorage, Matsu Valley, Prince William Sound. This is Alaska's most populous region.
Oh, right.
And it's also like being the hottest girl at a Dungeons & Dragons tournament.
Yeah. I was thinking for such a long time about that. I'm like, what's the one, you know? Yeah. Yeah, we lived up in Anchorage we lived up near there for a year. That was when we first came from New York. We moved from Brooklyn, literally. Like, we got in a car and drove from Brooklyn to Palmer. It took us like 2 weeks, I think. We really were booking it there. Wow. And I'd never been to Alaska before. And, you know, we were just like, and that was before the whole Sarah Palin thing, too. So it was just kind of like, here we are in this place.
What are we doing?
But yeah.
Well, talking about her, she must have provided a lot of content. So you got here before she was a phenomenon, and then.
Yeah, and then she became a phenomenon. And I think a lot of people have gotten a lot of great mileage. I mean, you know, you don't want to, like, do too much, and I try to be. I mean, I try. You'd be hard pressed to find like any type of, you know, political. You know what I mean? I'm trying not to. You know, you can say what you will. I mean, you can probably decipher if you really wanted to, like how it is that I. But it doesn't. You know, it's like funny because my wife and I will be watching comedy or we're watching like Janine Garofalo, for instance, every recent thing. We'll go, Janine Garofalo, like, I wonder what she's up to, and she's really, really funny. And then she starts talking about all this like political stuff, and we're like, we get it. Like, I get, understand that you are an actor. I get it, understand. And it's like, click, done now. But anyway, so I also don't want to alienate anybody. Like, I kind of am like, here is a way that I can. I think probably if it wasn't for a newspaper, it would be a lot dirtier, and that probably would alienate people.
Possibly.
Yeah, I'm actually really scared. I think I'm going to start writing a book maybe in the next little bit of time, and there's not going to be anyone editing that at all.
Like, really?
It's going to be
about
Sarah Palin? Yeah, I'm going to. No, it can be about whatever it happens to be. No. But she's, you know, she's a such an interesting person because, you know, you want to. It's like, how can you make a joke about someone that has already had so many jokes made about them? Mm-hmm. And also, you know, that Tina Fey thing, a lot of people, it's to the point where. You know, it, like when people do imitations of Bill Cosby, they're really doing an imitation of Eddie Murphy doing an imitation of Bill Cosby. They're like, you know, it's not even the guy, it's like the imitation of the guy, you know? So that it presents a challenge. It's like, what can I do with this particular thing? And I can't not mention it. I mean, and that's also, I mean, she's responsible, and I would say in many ways, for like a lot of people even knowing what was going on here. Like,
sure.
You know what I mean? Like, people. Suddenly, there's no mistake. It's like, oh, because people were looking up north because suddenly there's this person. It's like, oh, there's coast. That's people are seeing it. You know, there was a guy. There's someone who's writing regular articles in the New York Times about the Mendenhall River Valley, like getting higher or something like that. Yeah, the sea level is actually dropping or something. And it's like no one would have written that article had the New York Times not sent people up here. To be covering the same, it's like, oh, here are all these other interesting things going on.
Yeah.
So it's just bringing me back to that, you know, to that kind of thing again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, plus it's, for me too, I'm trying really hard to make something that is, like, the people of this town can enjoy. Because, you know, you kind of, whatever there is here is what you get, right? You know, and sometimes outside stuff comes here and that's totally awesome, but I think that's probably a big reason why there are so many people who do so many things, because it needs to be homegrown in order for it to be here. And it's like, well, here's something that I can do, and I'd love to have it be for people who are here. But then at the same time, here's a link to something that I can put on Facebook or I can send to my friends so they can read it also. So it's like a very fine line walking between of like, you know, who to make it for. And, to make it for everybody is a trick, you know, which is, again, why, like, if I'm going to say something about Sarah Palin, it would have nothing to do with politics in any way, shape, or form. Like, I generally try and stay away from that. And even when I was in New York, which is what I was doing before I came here, we did comedy, we did sketch comedy. And the thing, I think part of the reason why we never got further with it, I mean, my partner was, he wrote for The Daily Show for many years, and he's got, you know, Emmy Awards, and I was on a short list of people who almost was, I mean, I almost was a Daily Show writer, and I would be in New York, and you'd never even met me, and we wouldn't even be having this conversation right now. But I'd still be living in New York, which is kind of a pain, instead of here, which is so much more mellow of a place to be, and everyone is really appreciative, and that's another thing, is like, if you do something, people are so excited for it, because otherwise it wouldn't be, there's nothing, you know, it's just really, really cool. And that's like what I really liked about that Maritime Festival. Like, you just, I guess I played a few songs at the Alaska Folk Festival, and it was like the scariest, most fun thing I've ever done. And then suddenly someone's getting in touch with me, like, oh, and then, you know, like, oh, here's like $50. Like, I totally had like a paying gig to just do some ridiculous thing that people enjoyed. And
in
New York,
that.
People are like, shut up, there's just so much going on. Like, it's not even that they won't appreciate you, it's that they don't even see you.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, so.
If you're just tuning in out there, we're talking to Jeff Kirsch, who is a columnist in the Juneau Empire. He writes an article called Slack Tide. This is Adrian Lopez on the Alaska Identity Project. Now, Jeff, you also have your first kind of calendar, or what do we call it, a book content?
Yeah,
that
out? I've been calling it a book just because, you know, it makes me feel cool, you know, especially.
Yeah.
But it is. I mean, it was 40,000 words. That's a book length. You know, it's 320 pages, but it is a calendar.
Okay.
But it's like.
I have something I was going to read about it.
Please.
Can
please
I introduce
do.
It?
Oh, yes. Please do.
The world, it's a little bit long, but the world may be coming to an end on December 21st, 2012. But my major label debut, Run for Your Life, Doomsday 2012, page-a-day calendar, goes all the way to post-apocalyptic New Year's Eve. En route, I take a nice long look at the supposed 2012 end, including, among other things, a who's who of world destroyers, parentheses, Four Horsemen, Stay Puffed, Marshmallow Man, Punxsutawney Phil, foods likely to survive Armageddon, rice, sweet tarts, McRib sandwich, past doomsday predictions, there's been one a year every year since the rollover from BC to AD, 2012 prophecies, Mayans, Nostradamus, History Channel, a guy named Daryl Anka, who works as a Hollywood effects artist, and also channels a supernatural being named Bashar. Seriously. And zombies, lots and lots and lots of zombies.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's a lot to take in.
This is a project that just was a random deal. Again, my writing partner, whose name is Jason Reich, he left The Daily Show. But then I guess apparently a writer from the Conan O'Brien show had this idea of doing a calendar that sort of counts down to the supposed apocalypse that's coming on December 21st, 2012.
Yeah.
That's when the Mayan calendar, there's a Mayan long-count calendar. In a brief nutshell, it's like 5,125-year-long calendar, the last day of which is December 21st, 2012. It's also the solstice. It's also 12-21-12. That's, you know, one of those palindromic numbers, and people are... So anyway...
Scared. I'm scared.
Yeah, there's really nothing to be scared about. But but anyway, so... this Conan writer pitched the project, and they said, yeah, let's go ahead and do it. And meanwhile, Conan went back on the air on TBS, so the person couldn't do it. So it filtered down first to my friend, who couldn't do it because he was writing for another show, and then to me, and it was like, oh, this is great. And so, you know, I'm always getting, like, sloppy seconds and thirds from him, but I'll take it. You know, I'll take crumbs, that's for sure. Like, these are very delicious, tasty crumbs. So anyway, like, I had to write this whole thing about the apocalypse, basically, and so it's like, how many different angles can I come at it from? And I basically needed 320 days, because it's 6 days a week, like Saturday and Sunday are condensed into one. But there are two jokes on each page. So there's like 600, there's a lot of jokes. There's 700 individual jokes about the supposed forthcoming apocalypse. And it's everything. I mean, you know, there are quotes in there, but there's jokes within the quotes and stuff. And then, but there's, it's really crazy. Like, once you started looking into it, I mean, that guy, Daryl Anka, / Bashar,
I've never
really
heard of him.
Does exist. It's bashar.org. And you guys should check it out, because it is, I mean, again, I'm not trying to offend any believers in Bashar, like, and I think that there are people who, in California, I think there's a whole cult of people who are into him. You can watch him. He does these videos on YouTube also, and they're great. I mean, it's he's just so serious about it.
Yeah.
But like at the same time, Bashar, this guy Daryl Anka really did Hollywood effects for like Independence Day and a couple of other blockbuster movies. He's Hollywood effects artist, but he also is this guy. I guess I think it's something like every single. An infinite number of dimensions will merge or something like that.
Wow.
I don't really know. It's very difficult to understand.
Some of it, yeah.
But this guy, Bashar, also, not only does he have a website with all these doomsday prophecies, but it's got like a big, fat copyright infringement warning on it. So it's like, okay, you know, you're... what does... A, if you're an all-knowing, all-seeing being, who cares? Like, if your stuff is copywritten, you know? And then also, if the world is coming to an end in 2012, I mean, you know, it takes a long time to bring suit. I mean, you're really going to go... Really? That's how you're going to spend
the last days?
It doesn't make any sense.
Fighting in a courtroom.
It's really funny. There's a gift shop you could buy t-shirts. And it's completely serious. This guy is dead serious.
Wow. So you have a lot of characters that came out as
yeah.
you researched
and
this
there are, you know, you have a lot throughout the history, throughout the course of history, obviously there are people, charlatans, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
But also, like, Isaac Newton got into numerology late in his career, and so did Christopher Columbus, and they started applying these weird numerological ideas to certain books and coming up with things that... Just nutty stuff like that.
Yeah.
But also, people have been expecting the world to end, like I said, since BC became AD, you know, even like the year 1 AD and then the year 666 AD. The year 1000, there was a Y1K scare.
Really?
Yeah. I went all throughout Europe. People gave all their money to the church, to the Catholic Church, because they thought that, like, you know, it rolled over from 999, that it was
yeah.
just, you know, who knows what was going to happen. Like, the wheels were going to fall off all the, like, carriages or something. I don't know.
But, the Catholic Church made a lot of money off
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly. They didn't give the money back.
The marketing campaign.
Yeah, exactly. So there was a Y1K, and then people have taken different events that have happened throughout history that, like, people thought that Halley's Comet was going to be
yeah.
the end of the world, and there was a tremendous amount of profiteering that went on, people selling, like, anti-comet pills and just crazy stuff like that. It's just... So anyway, there was a lot of interesting things. And then you take another look. There's construction tips for building bunkers, and then there you can buy your own old ICBM silo
wow.
and move into it. I mean, if you wanted to, and there are these places that'll do that for you, and then there's luxury bunkers underground that you can move into, and there's all kinds of crazy stuff. And then, yeah, there's national bomb shelters that are in throughout China. There's a lot of them in China, actually,
huh.
that are designed to hold like 500,000 people. One of them has a roller skating rink in it now.
Really?
And a mall. Yeah. Yeah. And then there's other places like that in England that you can rent out and have weddings at them and stuff that are, yeah, so all over the place. In the United States, too. And the book goes into, the calendar goes into that also.
Very neat. How long did it take to put this together?
I actually had to do it really, really fast because this project was kind of like put off till the very, very end. So I did the whole thing in about 6 weeks, maybe. Yeah, it was a lot.
Yeah.
And my son had just been born, too. Like, I remember sending an email to my editor, and that makes me so, that feels so cool. But I'm like, oh, my editor in New York.
In New York.
I'm like, I'm going to go visit my editor. I'm going to go see my editor now. I have to take a meeting. We're going to have lunch. You know, they bought me a coffee. I felt so cool. And my father-in-law writes for the New York Times, and he's written books and stuff, and he's like, you got coffees? Like, that's all you got? I'm like, no, I got... But he's like, they should have at least bought you lunch. You got to get lunch. I should have told me that before I went down there.
After meeting your editor.
But what was I saying?
About
how
long it took
I
to put
remember
it
having to send an email being like, hey, because they were still deciding 100% on it. And I was like, hey, if you don't hear back from me, just I'm going to the hospital with my wife tomorrow because we're having a baby, right? So it literally the two things came right at the same time, which is kind of interesting.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, so that was even more nutty. But they both came out real good, really good.
Yeah. So how are the calendars sales? Are you selling on your website, which
yeah,
is
you
probably
can get
Jeff
it
Kirsch?
From jeffkirsch.com, and my name is spelled GeoffKirsch. It's got, you know, there's a couple of tricky silent consonants in there, but
it's on our website.
Yeah, there's
too.
On the website.
KTO
and
News.
Oh, is it on? Okay, awesome. That's great.
Thing.
Yeah, totally. And if you were to look up Slacktide, for instance, in the Juno Empire website, you could find it that way too. But yeah, there's links to it on my website, and there's some samples on there, and again, you know, don't tell workmen because I didn't get 100% explicit written consent and, again, rock copyright infringement. But that's one of the great things about living up in June. I mean, who's gonna know?
And
soon enough, people are going to... I mean, right now, we're coming down to the end of when people are going to buy new calendars, basically.
True.
But I'm hoping that people will get it as a stocking stuffer. As I say, it makes a really good stocking stuffer because it fits inside most standard stockings.
Yeah, that's great.
Flips right
the
easily in
one.
There. So there you go.
Well, is it at Costco yet? Or
you know, I actually looked at Costco and they did not have it there. They have it at Hearthside in the Valley here in Juneau. Apparently, someone told me that there's some kind of it's even like in a display case up front. I haven't seen it. I haven't been out to the Valley Hearthside in a while. But and you can also get it online. But definitely. It'd be great to buy out as many copies from Hearthside, too.
Okay.
But, yeah,
I mean... Were there any apocalyptic issues in Alaska? Did you find anything up here in your research? Are we safe here when the world ends?
You know, it depends on who you are. I mean, it depends on what doomsday scenario you're talking about. But in certain ones, it'd be... I mean, if global warming was going to happen, this would be a really good place to be, I bet.
Yeah.
I think about that, what would happen. I mean, it's fairly self-sustainable, right, where we are in some ways, but then it's completely reliant on things being shipped up here. So I don't know. That's a good question. But there's not anything specifically. I'm trying to think about it. If I don't know. I think... That Barrow, you just said you were going to Barrow at some point in time soon.
Yeah,
that would be
yeah.
like a neat place to be for like the end of the earth, like at the northernmost tip of the, you know, as far as you could get. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's pretty dark. That's the solstice. I've always wanted to spend the solstice in Barrow, I think.
That'd be cool.
I don't know what I would have. I mean, I wonder if I could get something, some kind of purpose to go there, aside from just travel.
Well, maybe your editor will pay for it.
Maybe. I don't know, maybe.
So getting back to your Alaskapedia.
Right.
Which was all you want to know about Alaska and less.
Mm-hmm. And I would love to do an entry on Barrow, but I, you know, these are,
okay.
That's a big good reason. I mean, I think one day it's like, well, that could be a cool book if I ever was able to put together enough. But I mean, that would be reason enough to go up there. I would never write anything about a place that I haven't been. Unfortunately, that's going to limit me to how many... to how many entries I'm going to put. But I'm sorry, what was your
question?
No,
just there was some talk of, in your article that you'd written about, mm-hmm. All You Want to Know About Alaska and Less, somebody wrote in about currently in the world, they liked the comment that you said about Alaskans. There's a reality show about Alaskans who do nothing but sit around watching Alaska-based reality show.
Oh, yeah.
What is that called?
Deadliest Couch.
Good. You
That's
remember.
Pretty good, right? Of course, I knew that. Good. Yeah. How can I forget that? I was like, that is a good...
Deadliest Couch.
I honestly got to tell you, I think that may have been the first joke that I wrote of that entire thing.
Really?
I was like, Deadliest Couch. Oh, my God, that's so funny. Sometimes, you know, you can sort of coalesce. The way I go about it, I'll usually have like a couple. If I can think of a couple of really good jokes like that, then I'm like, all right, I can fake my way to these really big laughs.
Those are big ones.
And then that'll be all that people remember.
Yeah. So, but just a comment about reality shows. I mean, there's tons.
Right.
Do you watch them to get content on Alaska?
I've watched an episode of each of them. I find them boring, but at the same time, I'm kind of annoyed that I hadn't thought of that. You know, I was like, oh, how about a show about an Alaska cupcake maker? I mean, I'd almost kind of like, I wish someone would make cupcakes so you could
make a show about them.
I don't know, Alaskan cake boss. Like, it almost is kind of like you start combining things, right? They used to have a show on Animal Planet called Pet Psychic that was a lot like that show Crossing Over with John Edwards, you know, where they would talk to... But this was like they would be talking to the dead pets, right? This pet psychic would have some kind of psychic mind meld, but it was specifically on Animal Planet. And then there was another like animal star. It was like American Idol, basically.
Huh.
But anyway, so I'm thinking maybe that there could be some kind of stuff like that. I don't know. There's got to be a way to cash in on it. Many people are making so much money off of Alaska right now. I mean, that's going to be the new... That's going to be the new industry. Like, once there's no more oil, then what? Then it's just going to be just more
industry.
And more reality shows. And get a...
Or movies. There's more movies being filmed up here, right?
There totally are.
So you don't have a favorite show out of all of them? You know, cutting wood or flying in an airplane?
You know, there was that show Tougher in Alaska that was only on for a year or so. And just that guy was so... His name was Geo Beach, I think.
Okay, that's quite a name.
And, yeah, and he was, I think he lived in Homer or something. Just something about that guy was just very interesting to watch because it seemed very, I don't know, he was really kind of stiff. I auditioned for not a reality show set in Alaska, but when I was in New York, I had an interview. That's probably the reason why I didn't get it. It's an audition.
Exactly,
is what it was called. No, I had an audition to be a host of like a do-it-yourself. I mean, it was absolutely disastrous. So again, like Geo Beach, again, if he's listening to this, I'm sorry, man. You're doing the best.
Good job, Geo
My
Beach.
Job would be even much worse. Like I watch old videos. I used to do work on stage, and I was in some short films when I was again living in New York when I had more energy and no children and aspirations of being famous.
Well, you will be famous, Jeff, and you've been a great guest here on the Alaska Identity Project. I appreciate we got to wrap up this half hour because ending the 30-minute time slot. But I just want to remind listeners out there that Jeff Kirsch has a calendar out for 2012. It's called Run for Your Life, Doomsday 2012. It came out from Workman. And if you're interested in any more of his great creative works, you can go to his website at
jeffkirsch.com, jeffkirsch.com.
jeffkirsch.com. It's also on the KTO News website, and you can go to Slacktide, the column in the Juno Empire. So thanks again, Jeff.
No,
we'll have you back on.
This was really fun. This is the most fun I've had on a Thursday. It is Thursday, right? Yeah. This is the most fun I've had on a Thursday night in a really long time.
Awesome. Thank you very much. We'll be back in the next half hour with Niels Andreasen, Managing Director of the Institute of the North. Stay tuned here on the Alaska Identity Project.
Miles of elbow room on either side.
Welcome back to the Alaska Identity Project. This is Adrian Lopez here on KTO News Juno 104.3 in Alaska's capital city. Thanks for staying tuned. In the first half hour of the program, we were talking with Jeff Kirsch, an Alaskan comedian who writes in the Juno Empire a column called Slack Tide. He also has a calendar coming out, or it's already out. It's called Run for Your Life, Doomsday 2012. Great first half hour. The next half hour, we'll be talking with Niels Andreasen, Managing Director of the Institute of the North. Before we get into that interview, I just want to remind people of a couple events coming up this weekend and next week. First of all, on Saturday, there's the Juno Robot Jamboree. It's from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Centennial Hall. If you want to come out and watch the Southeast Regional First LEGO League Tournament, spectators are encouraged to come out from 1 to 3. So you don't have to come out to the whole day. You can come out for part of the day and watch kids compete with Legos. And the Southeast Economic Summit will be on Tuesday, December 13th. It's 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Centennial Hall. This is being put on by the Juno Economic Development Council and the U.S. Department of Agriculture to talk about the economic development of Southeast Alaska and the challenges and opportunities of key industries like renewable energy, forest products, visitors products, and ocean products. If you want to register, you can go to jedc.org/summit. And up next here, Niels Andreasen. He is Managing Director of the Institute of the North. His background in rural and international development, Alaska policy issues, and leadership development fit well within the Institute's mission to research commonly owned lands, seas, and resources while educating and engaging Alaskans in the responsibilities of that ownership. The Institute has a legacy working on Arctic infrastructure priorities and policies that serve to strengthen and connect northern communities. Andreasen has a degree in peace and development from the University of Bradford in England and has lived in Anchorage, Alaska since 2002. Niels is the Anchorage coordinator for the Knowledge Industry Network, a networking event for young professionals, is also an organizing member of the Anchorage Urban League Young Professionals, is a coordinator for the Conference of Young Alaskans, and is also a coordinator for the Alaska Leadership Development Network. That's quite a lot of stuff you're doing, Niels. Are you there?
I am here.
Hey.
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. Thanks for calling in tonight. I know you're a busy guy, and you made a half hour of your time to call into the Alaska Identity Project, so thanks for coming on.
I'm glad to do it. Judging from the bio, it seems like I should be very busy.
But you're not tonight. You're at your child's holiday party, you said, right?
Yep. So if my daughter comes out and jumps in the car, there might be noise, just you.
Okay.
That's your audience,
no. Well, you know, actually, when I had the lieutenant governor on, he was in the airport, and we had all this background noise of him boarding the plane. So I think yours will be minimal compared to that. So just to get us started here, the Institute, you talk about in your mission, Alaska, this key stakeholder affecting policy in the Arctic. Can you just give us a little background on the Institute of the North and how it's both an advocate and a convener and plays those double roles here in our state?
Yeah, it's actually an interesting balance between the two. The Institute was founded by Governor Hickel in 1994 to look at, you know, how can Alaska's and the North, how can resource-rich commons be developed to support the peoples and communities of both areas. I would say that we use Alaska as a model or a testing ground for sustainable development, responsible development of resources to support our communities and people. So at the same time, it's a great place to explore opportunities for civic engagement. So that combination of sustainable development and civic engagement means that we do act as a convener. We bring the public sector, private sector, rural, urban, native, non-native, academia together throughout the year to discuss critical public policy issues facing the state. And we do that from a couple of different lenses. One is kind of your executive leadership lens, but then also from an emerging leader's lens, which, you know, really asks young leaders to explore new ideas and a new vision for the future. So we're an advocate in that we are constantly saying that, you know, Alaska has a role, should have a role in decision-making at a national and international stage. We're an Alaska booster, if that's still a term.
Yeah, of course.
But then, you know, just really being a convener so that people can come together and build relationships and be able to address the many challenges that we have in front of us.
Yeah, that's great. Now, since Governor Hickel, former Governor Hickel, founded this organization, do you think it's made a difference in being this Alaska booster over the years?
I think so. You know, I think we have a reputation as being an independent convener, that we are nonpartisan, that we can bring leaders to the table in ways that make a difference. And you know, it's really our job right now is sustaining that now that he's passed away. And you know, I think it's funny because we're asked quite often to measure what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, you know, I measure the difference that we make in the stories that people tell me about, you know, life-changing events, relationships that have changed their worldview, have meant business opportunities, mentorship opportunities, on so many different levels that, you know, I think that increasingly we are, you know, we have made a difference, but we are making a difference.
Yeah. Now, in what part of what Walter Hickel says, which is on your website, it talks about understanding the reality, the richness, and responsibility of the North. That word,
yeah,
responsibility, how have you guys, what is our responsibility up here in the North? Is it to lead, like you say, on some of these issues, the Arctic issues?
Well, for us, for me, it's enshrined in our state constitution. In Article 1, it talks about Alaskans having rights, and, you know, in all state constitutions, citizens have rights. But I think we're one of two constitutions, and I think we're the first that say that we have corresponding obligations to each other and to the state. And so I think that there's a different kind of responsibility for Alaskans and maybe for northern peoples in general, to understand the issues that are affecting us, to understand the opportunities that are out there and the role that we can play in and around those opportunities. But then also to the state and our community. So we've got, you know, I think we've got a hyper-citizenship model almost, in that, you know, we talk about kind of degrees of separation, that we're all involved in so many levels of governance in the state, through our friendships and business relationships and the legislators that we meet at, you know, in the store. We just have a heightened sense of who we are and how we can be involved.
Yeah.
So the responsibility is knowing what those issues look like and how to affect them and work to actively affect them.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Now, part of the people working in this are young people here in Alaska, right? And you guys have this COYA, or Conference of Young Alaskans.
Yep.
Can you tell me a little bit more about this program, how long it's been going on, and who participates?
Yeah. One of the last things that Governor Hickel said to me before he passed away was that the young have to understand the obligations of ownership. And for us, that means the obligations that come with citizenship. And so we've built up an emerging leaders program with that in mind, that connects young Alaskans to each other, first off, and then to the issues facing the state. And so we've got other emerging leaders programs, but the Conference of Young Alaskans is actually something that we inherited from the University of Alaska, who had hosted it in 2006 and 2009. The conference, modeled off of the Constitutional Convention, brings together 55 delegates. In 2006 and 2009, it was based on, you know, the 50th anniversary of statehood and then the Constitutional Convention, and brought together 55 delegates from around the state to actively look at what are the issues facing us, what has our history been, and where do we want to go?
Hmm. Yeah, now, what issues come up in some of these discussions, and what are some of the challenges that or you said the participants kind of tell their stories when they come together, right?
Yeah, well, it's a delegate-driven process, so, you know, we refer to it as one of the premier opportunities in the state. for young Alaskans to kind of shape their future. And I think that it is because, you know, the priorities that are addressed are set by young Alaskans.
Mm-hmm.
And there's very little outside direction as to the content. So it's basically a strategic planning process. They're asked in their application process to identify priorities, and it's amazing because, I mean, you could ask just about anyone what their priorities are, and a lot of them would appear in the list that we produce. But we've tried to frame it around five general issue areas that it seemed like young Alaskans were interested in. Economic development and fiscal policy,
mm-hmm.
Energy and power, mm-hmm. education and workforce development, living harmoniously with oneself and community,
okay.
which is, there's actually a Yupik word for it that I can't pronounce without it in front of me, and probably couldn't do it then, but I'm working on it.
Next
but
show.
The translation means that, you know, living harmoniously, so it's community wellness, it's cultural awareness and respect and all those social aspects that we group together. And then the fifth theme or thematic area this year is has to do with natural resources and the environment. So it's framed around those five areas, and then people go through a strategic planning process and identify a vision for each, set up goals, and then action items to reach the goals.
Wow, quite involved. Now, do you find that certain issues emerge more stronger in, I don't know, South Central versus Southeast Alaska?
That's an interesting question. We, like, out of the 55 delegates, there are 29 communities represented from around the state. So it's very diverse, and I think, you know, the perspectives that come out are diverse. The goals and action items, though, are remarkably, they're not region-oriented or self-interested, and they really have they're Alaska first. It's an Alaska first coming together, and it was one of my takeaways from the last COYA that, you know, I don't think Democrat or Republican came up once. And I think in the same way, people don't talk about, well, my region needs this.
Yeah.
It's how can a very broad-based policy apply to all Alaskans and have an impact throughout the state?
Yeah, well, that's a good point. We need to think more like a state instead of regional battles, right?
Yeah, it's amazingly holistic. And I think, I like to think that that's how young people think, and kind of in a way that's comprehensive, detached from self-interest, and more, you know, how can we all do this together for everyone?
Mm-hmm. Now, the 55 delegates, are they chosen? Do you have, like, hundreds apply, and then you choose these 55, or how does that work?
Yeah, the number of applications has differed over the years. This year we had almost 100 applicants and chose 55. In prior years, there had been more applications. I think actually we scared people off to some degree. We've made it a very competitive process. And so there's a learning curve around what competitiveness looks like. But I have been incredibly impressed with the quality of applications, and, you know, any one of the applicants that applied this year would make an excellent delegate.
Excellent.
And that's, I think it's a promising note for the state's future.
Definitely. Now, is there an expectation on a person that is a delegate to the Conference of Young Alaskans after they've gone to this conference or event? Do they have an expectation to fulfill after the year or in the years following?
There's no explicit expectation, though. I guess just speaking first of, you know, looking back at 2006 and 2009, I have seen those delegates more active in policy discussions, in leadership roles around the state, than, I would say, any other young Alaskan out there. I mean, these are people who are going to make a difference or are making a difference, and COYA was a stepping stone to that experience. This year, the 55 delegates will choose a small delegation to send back to Juneau to present their final report to legislators. So there's that expectation. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think that what we start doing is creating a community of our cohort. They become a cohort, but we develop a community of young leaders who you know, are sensitive to where we've been and where we're going and have the relationships to do something about it.
Yeah, definitely. Now, actually, we have a local girl, Maria Jose Narrero, who is works for KTUO, actually. She's one of your delegates for the COYA process.
Yeah.
Yeah, and she's originally from Chile, which is another connection in my world.
Yeah, there's a number of, there's some great connections from Southeast Alaska. I think we've got seven delegates from Ketchikan, one from Sitka, a couple from Juneau. So Southeast has some great representation, and a disproportionate to population and everything. So I'm really excited to see that come out,
yeah,
because the issues are different. And for as much as, well, when I talk about an oil pipeline or a gas pipeline up here, but you know, I think it's a different conversation in Southeast Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
That delegates will have an opportunity to be sensitive to,
definitely,
learn about.
Definitely. And for those just tuning in here on KTO News, this is the Alaska Identity Project. We're talking with Niels Andreasen. He's Managing Director at Institute of the North. And just to wrap up the Conference of Young Alaskans piece, that you can actually find the pictures of everybody on Facebook, right? So you can look for the organization through there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Institute of the North is on Facebook, and so every day we're posting two photos and bios of delegates and some amazing stories of what they've done and where they're coming from and who they want to be.
Yeah. Well, good luck with that. Now, the Institute of the North does a lot more, so we want to try to get a little bit more information out there and inform people about your role. And one of the events coming up this year, at least from your website, it says at the crossroads of practice and policy, commercial applications of northern airships. What's going on there? That's pretty complicated.
It is. We have, you know, it's actually interesting to kind of segment out the work that we do. Arctic infrastructure, transportation and energy infrastructure has been kind of a legacy project for the Institute. We've been involved with Arctic Council work around these issues, have hosted an Arctic Aviation Experts Conference a number of times. And so a lot of what we do has to revolve around those issues. And this opportunity came up to convene a conference on northern airships in collaboration with NASA and State Department of Transportation. I think that, you know, technology is moving in a way that would surprise a lot of people, and the ability to transport goods, and especially, you know, very heavy goods to remote locations, is something that Arctic nations are increasingly looking at, and airships are a vehicle for doing this. They have, you know, very little footprint. And so it's just, you know, one of those options that needs to be explored. And you know, I think we talk a lot about the same issue often.
What issue did you say, Niels?
The same issue.
The same,
You know, we kind of got, you know, handful of issues that we kind of revolve around in the state, and the Institute's role and goal is to bring in new best practices, new ideas, creative approaches, so that we can elevate the conversation and get people to think creatively. So I think this is a great opportunity to get people thinking in new ways.
Mm-hmm. So this will be in June of 2012 this year, or next year.
Yeah.
Who's invited? You said NASA will be there. What are the
partners? NASA, State Department of Transportation. You know, it's actually a conference that our deputy director just got back from in Seattle on airships, hosted by a Canadian group. So it's a conversation taking place in Canada, taking place in Norway, in Scandinavia. and that the state Department of Transportation and NASA had hosted earlier in Alaska this year. So we're just building on these conversations and bringing in the private sector, the public sector to the table to kind of figure out what would a way forward look like.
Right.
And that was a lot of what we did when we just hosted the Norway policy tour. We host an Alaska dialogue, an emerging leaders dialogue every year. It's opportunities to bring in new ideas and bring people together and see if we can sketch out next steps.
Yeah, exactly. Now, you also host or you attend the Beringa Jays Conference? Am I saying that right?
Yeah, Beringa. It's actually in collaboration or a cooperative agreement with the National Park Service. And so this was an opportunity to really highlight and celebrate the shared culture of Beringa, which is Chukotka in the Russian Far East and then the Seward Peninsula and north in Alaska. And that shared culture, and so we had a great Russian delegation come to Nome. And I think we had just, around 150 people, 100 from the community, attending and just, sharing stories, sharing science, and celebrating, what they have together.
Yeah. Huh. And this happens every year? Can anybody go to this event?
I want to say that it doesn't happen every year, that it's every 2 or 3 years.
Okay.
And this was our first opportunity to help coordinate that.
Wow.
We've worked with to kind of bring it home to Southeast, Northwood Southeast Conference, to bring young leaders together in different ways. And we're talking right now about a mid-session summit is coming up in March, and how can we get more young leaders involved in Southeast public policy. So a lot of examples of, I think, how we bring people together.
Yeah, no, it's great. And we don't have too much time left, but I think it's important, this message of this hyper-citizenship and the obligation of being involved in Alaska and how our future is determined through these different voices. And if someone's out there and maybe they're not a young Alaskan and they can't get involved with the COYA process, what do you say to people who do want to get involved? What are ways to do that, and either through the Institute of the North or other ways?
I would say that, we talk about emerging leaders at the Institute as 21 to 40-year-old range. But people emerge at any time in their life. They move into new careers. They graduate from a new course in college. And we're always happy to help connect people to new opportunities for them. I talk about, walk down the street without tripping over a volunteer opportunity out there. There are tons of nonprofit organizations. There are tons of public policy organizations, all of whom are dedicated to finding ways to educate Alaskans. People can give me a call. 771-2448 is my office number. They can visit our website. We host things throughout the year that bring people together. And this hyper-citizenship is a fun idea, but I think it's real. I mean, it's a reality where, I walk around with a small Alaska state constitution, and I've seen other people do it. We keep the Alaska flag song in our heads, and, it's something that we're proud to be Alaskans, but we're more and more aware of how they do it outside, and want to recognize that and be able to grow a great Alaska for future generations.
Definitely. Yeah, make this state wonderful and great and keep people living here and appreciating what we have. So.
Yep, yeah.
Well, you guys are shaping change and doing that at the Institute of the North, so I appreciate you calling in and informing everyone a little bit more about what you guys do. And I'm sure we'll have you back on, especially as the legislature gets rolling here in Juneau, and I'm sure you'll be here more often, Niels.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks again. We were talking with Niels Andreasen, Managing Director of the Institute of the North, here on the Alaska Identity Project. Thanks for tuning in.